Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1920, with a release date of May 30th, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Good news for international cooperation and amateur radio satellite development. The Ukrainian National Radio Society says that Crimea should remain theirs for DXCC. Special AM nets will mark the 70th anniversary of D-Day. KickSat re-enters the Earth's atmosphere without releasing its cargo of Sprite Picosats. And a final wrap-up on Hamvention 2014. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1920, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Some good news for United States hams and amateur radio groups involved in the development of ham radio satellites. ITAR regulations are being eased. Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News, is here with the details.
The ITAR? It's the International Traffic in Arms Regulations, which inexplicably applies to amateur radio satellites. It threatens USA radio hams with jail terms or six-figure fines if they cooperate with amateurs outside the USA on satellite projects. Among the projects already affected by ITAR has been the New Zealand amateur radio satellite KiwiSat. A 2009 IARU Region 3 report highlights that ITAR, their requirements made AMSAT North America direct its members to cease cooperation with AMSAT ZL in the development of KiwiSat. Satellite Today reports that after 15 years of restrictions and intense scrutiny, the United States Department of State is reclassifying satellites and several related components so they will no longer be treated as weapons. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of WIA News, reporting from Brisbane, Australia.
ITAR regulations were also partially responsible for AMSAT North America's cancellation several years ago of its Eagle HamSat project, because those same restrictions made it almost impossible to work with its international partners on this ambitious project. The new and less restrictive ITAR rule on satellites and related technology became effective this coming November 10th, except for Section 121.1, Category XVD, which is effective on June the 27th. Ukrainian Amateur Radio League says that it considers the Crimea as a temporarily occupied territory and that it should continue to be listed as a part of the Ukraine for ham radio awards purposes. In a May 3rd letter to the ARRL, the Ukrainian National Society noted that it strongly believes what it terms as the illegal referendum held in Crimea on March the 16th and subsequent illegal annexation of the Crimean Peninsula by the Russian Federation does not change the status of this territory. Now, back in March, the ARRL Awards Committee had evaluated the current situation in Crimea in light of the DXCC rules and determined that Crimea is not a DXCC entity. This was because neither Russia nor the Ukraine is a rare entity, and the vast majority of confirmations used for DXCC credit for either entity do not involve Crimea. Now, in a response to the Ukrainian Amateur Radio League's letter, ARRL Chief Executive Officer David Sumner, K1ZZ, acknowledged the Ukrainian Society's position, but reiterated the ARRL Awards Committee determination that the annexation did not lend Crimea status as a new DXCC entity.
I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, with some good news for an Ohio ham. In a surprise move, the Ohio 6th District Court of Appeals has dismissed an appeal from the village of Swanton in an amateur radio antenna zoning case. The matter involves Gary Woodkey, WW8N, who's been trying to erect a 60-foot antenna support structure on his residential lot since 2009. But Swanton had established a fixed antenna height of 20 feet above a residential roofline, and it turned down Woodkey's antenna variance application for the tallest structure. On appeal in January, Woodkey won a final judgment in favor in the Fulton County Common Pleas Court. The court ruled that federal and state law preempted Swanton's antenna ordinance. The town had appealed that decision, but the new ruling means that Swanton really has no place to go with this matter other than the possibility of appealing it to the Ohio Supreme Court. It should be noted that the ARL was making ready to file a friend of the court brief on Woodkey's behalf when this latest ruling was handed down. Jim?
The KickSat amateur satellite burned up in the Earth's atmosphere without releasing its payload of Sprite Pico satellites. Re-entry took place on May the 14th after the tiny CubeSat's orbit decayed to a point where its atmospheric drag led to its fiery demise. As previously reported, KickSat suffered an unexpected computer glitch on April the 30th that caused the Sprite deployment countdown timer to reset. It proved impossible to correct the problem, meaning the timer did not trigger the release of the 100-plus sprites before the satellite burned up in the Earth's atmosphere. At airtime, it's not known if another KickSat project will be attempted. Friday, June the 6th, marks the 70th anniversary of the Allied D-Day landings in Normandy, France. To commemorate this event, the United Kingdom's Vintage and Military Amateur Radio Society is organizing a series of full carrier amplitude modulation nets on 80, 60, 40 meters for operators of vintage military wireless gear that would have been in use at that time. Now, these special AM nets will be open to all amateurs, and joining stations are encouraged to undertake a little research beforehand to provide a description of how their equipment type was used in Operation Overlord. The scheduled times and frequencies for these net operations are 0700 hours GMT on 3.615 MHz, 1100 UTC on 7.143 MHz, and 1,500 hours UTC on 5.317 megahertz in those nations where operations on this 5 megahertz frequency using full carrier AM is allowed. More about the sponsorship group is on the web now at vmars.org.uk. Two stations in France plan to be operational to commemorate the 70th anniversary of D-Day during the month of June. From June the 6th to the 20th, listen out for TM70JUN on 160 through 6 meters using CW, sideband, PSK, RIDI, and JT65. QSL via F4GAJ. Also, listen out for special event station TM70BMC from June 5th through the 8th. This operation will be located atop Mont Conisé in France's Normandy province. If you make contact, QSL to F5EL via the Bureau. In DX Upfront, word that DX Coffee and DX University have honored the TX5K operation from Clipperton Island with the 2013 Best Communications Award. This is in recognition of the large amount of information given before, during, and after the operation via the operation's official website and the related blog. According to the award sponsors, the information provided was extremely complete and covered everything from the documents describing the project, the equipment, the pilots, and photo gallery. Also, the very detailed information reported on the blog let readers experience every facet of the de-expedition from the beginning to the end. Also, Lisa Marks, KJ6GHN, is now operational stroke KH9 from Wake Island. She's currently working on Wake and will be there for the next few years. Her station is an ICOM 718, and she's been mainly operating PSK on 15 meters. QSL via the address on QRZ.com, but she asks that those wanting a QSL card be patient, and mail only comes there once a month. She does upload to Logbook of the World and Club Log, and also accepts Bureau QSLs. And this just in, the ARRL's DXCC desk has announced that the ZA-IZ4 JMA 2013 and 2014 operations from Albania and the 2014 XW7T operation from Laos have both been approved for DXCC credit. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W7CSK repeater in Everett, Washington. Last week, we brought you the human interest side of Hamvention 2014. This week, Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, takes a quick look at some of the product releases made this year.
The Dayton Hamvention is known for new product introductions each year, and 2014 was no different. For Yaesu, the word is fusion. Here's Dennis Motschenbacher, K7BV.
It's been kind of a big year in particular because we've had an awful lot of interest in our system fusion, which is our new digital dual mode digital and analog system that we have that allows digital users and analog users to coexist on the same repeater. And we introduced that repeater, our DR1X, this weekend.
At ICOM, D-Star rolls on. Ray Novak, N9JA.
The biggest thing has been talking about the 5100 and people seeing the Android app for it, the wireless control for it, the wireless headset, Bluetooth, great little radio.
Other new radios include the Tentec Patriot Model 507, a 20 and 40 meter SSB CW QRP open source rig, and the Flex 6300 software defined radio for 160 through 6. CR Radio Systems had their Telesense remote site monitoring system, and Hendrix QRP Kits had their new multiband CW transceiver. And year in, year out, nobody has more new stuff than Heil Sound. Here's Bob Heil, K9EID.
Our new HBA, it's a wireless adapter that you can use in your station. Run around for about 30 feet and you don't need a microphone cable. It's really cool. And it works on any radio for transmit from the microphone. And we're showing a couple of new products. We have the new K1000 headset. It'll be out probably August, September. It's an amazing headset. It is the best headset I have ever seen. And I have a new microphone, the new PR-10, the small version of the great PR-781. We brought back the BM-10 this year. The BM-10 was the first headset we did in 1985. And we brought it back with full range element and with our push to talk switch in line.
Radio waves and a couple of new antennas available. Emmett Hohensee, W0QH.
The first one is an all band off center fed antenna that we designed for the military. It's designed to give you everything from 160 meters all the way up to 10 meters without an autocoupler. It's a fantastic product that the military likes to use because they don't have time to mess with things, so they can just throw it up in a tree and it works.
Tell me about the other antenna.
Okay, that is an NVIS loop antenna that we designed specifically for the Ministry of Transportation in Quito, Ecuador. This antenna is an NVIS HF antenna that works 3.5 megahertz all the way up to 50 megahertz, and it literally mounts on top of a control tower. Every control tower in Ecuador right now has one of our antennas on its HF antennas on its roof.
How will they top themselves next year? I can't wait to find out. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW.
No report on Hamvention can be complete without the words of one of our best observers and analysts for well over a decade. Here's Chip Margelli, K7JA.
Dayton, actually, this year was quite good. We had some rough weather earlier in the week, and I know a lot of people got stranded and had some hail during the Hamvention. But overall, I think the crowd was quite good. It's been a rough winter, so I know a lot of people were looking for antennas, which kept our booth busy, and I think that overall people were just happy that we still got some good band conditions on HF and VHF, and we're in a good mood. Of course, the ARRL's 100th anniversary celebration had a lot of people interested too, and I think that helped the crowd.
Thanks, Chip, and we'll look forward to your report next year right after Hamvention 2015. A new and somewhat ambiguous distracting driving ordinance has been enacted in Shaker Heights, Ohio, that appears at least on the surface to cover only cell phones and texting. But there's a vague kind of caveat. There's no exemption for amateur radio or other mobile operations. In fact, the ordinance is written in such a vague way as almost to leave it to those enforcing it to decide if the law is being broken. To quote from the Frequently Asked Questions, or FAQ, published by the city to explain what was enacted, the new ordinance prohibits the use of handheld electronic wireless communications devices in any manner for composing, sending, or receiving text messages or using such a device to answer, dial, talk, or listen. And it's the last three words, answer, talk, or listen, that might be broadly interpreted by a law enforcement officer to include those using two-way radios that require push-to-talk microphones or even simply listening to one. There are a few exemptions to the Shaker Heights ordinance. Those only apply to police officers, firefighters, and Public Works Department employees. Now, members of the public will only see an exemption during emergencies to contact law enforcement hospitals, a healthcare provider, the fire department, or other similar agency. Don't sell counterfeit smartphones in the United States. This is the crux of a warning to one company from the FCC, as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Hal Rogers, KHCMD.
The FCC Enforcement Bureau has cited Panasystem Corporation, a California-based online electronics retailer, for importing and marketing what the agency termed as counterfeit smartphones, marked with unauthorized or invalid labels falsely indicating that the devices were certified by the FCC. The FCC investigation identified the smartphones imported by Panasystem as counterfeit Samsung models of the Galaxy S Duos and Galaxy Ace. Although these devices were labeled with seemingly valid Samsung FCC identifiers, the investigation showed that Samsung neither manufactured the devices nor authorized the FCC identifier labels. The investigation also revealed that another set of smartphones imported by Panasystem contained counterfeit BlackBerry Model 9790 devices. These smartphones were also labeled with invalid FCC identifiers, which rendered them illegal for sale in the United States. The FCC Enforcement Bureau's citation notified Panasystem that it must take immediate steps to come into compliance and discontinue the importation and marketing of these uncertified devices. If it fails to comply with the FCC's directive, it may be subject to penalties of up to $16,000 for each model per day for each violation. I'm Hal Rogers, KHCMD.
The complete text of the citation issued to Panasystem Corporation is available at tinyurl.com/banned-smartphones. The June 2014 edition of the free 432 megahertz above EME newsletter is now available. The current issue includes a picture of the impressive 15-foot dish antenna that Peter Blair, G3 LTF, used in 1964 for his experiments, as well as a report on the recent GS3 PYE-P de-expedition. You can download your free copy in either Word and PDF formats at tinyurl.com/432-and-above. Archived copies of past editions can be found on the website as well. The 2014 International Museum Weekend will take place on two weekends of June 14th, 15th, and the 21st and the 22nd. The purpose of the happening is to set up and operate amateur radio special event stations at as many of the museums as possible throughout the world. The choice of the museum is left to you. However, planners say that it's best to try for either the largest or most unusual site that's willing to host your operation. More details about the event and history and how to register can be found at www.radio-amateur-events.org. ARRL Media and Public Relations Manager Sean Kutzko, KX9X, has created a series of new 30-second radio audio public service announcements, or PSAs, designed for radio station airplay to promote radio amateurs and field day. The spot named Amateur talks about how the Amateur Radio Emergency Service helps during disasters. Careers tells how the amateur radio skills can lead to a new career path and references the ARRL website. What is Ham Radio is a generic spot to promote how much fun amateur radio can be. There are also two public service announcements promoting field day, one of which includes an 8-second music background or bed near the end to add your club's contact information. All are available for a free download at ARRL.org/public-service-announcements. This is Ham Radio News for today's amateur radio operator. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Partner members of the Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, or ARISS, recently met for the first time in almost 2.5 years at the European Space Agency Research and Technology Center in the Netherlands. The purpose of the gathering was to reassess the ARIS program overall direction and to consider new goals for it. One of the key speakers was Lou McFadden, W5DID, who amongst other things noted that there's a need for what he termed as a power override switch. This would be a simple way for the astronauts to shut down completely the ARIS equipment during safety-critical events such as extravehicular activities, which are better known as spacewalks. W5DID also suggested that there would be a definite advantage of installing a new and higher power VHF-UHF transceiver in the Columbus module, similar to the one located on the service module. Of late, many ARIS school contacts have been made using the 5-watt Ericsson handheld transceiver, making some of these QSOs difficult to achieve. The gathering was presided over by ARIS International Chairman Frank Bauer, KA3HDO. Meeting minutes and committee reports are on the web at tinyurl.com/ARIS.meet-2014. Sprout is a 15.5-pound microsatellite launched on May 24th from the Tanegashima Space Center in Japan to a 406-mile high sun-synchronous orbit. This satellite is a project of Nihon University and includes some interesting amateur radio payloads and experiments as well as CW telemetry. The experiment packages contain an FM digipeater, a digitalker, and a message box along with live and preloaded slow-scan TV pictures. The Morse-based telemetry can be found on 437.525 MHz, while the downlink for the slow-scan TV and digitalker is 437.600 MHz. Nihon University enjoyed previous success with SEEDS 2 Hamsat, also known as CO66. WRTC 2014, the host of the 2014 World Radio Sport Team Championship Competition, has announced the awards that will be available for stations that work the teams during the competition. The WRTC 2014 Chase will run concurrently with the IARU HF Championship beginning July 12th at 1200 hours UTC. The 59 WRTC 2014 stations will have distinctive call signs that will be easy to recognize. Everyone's encouraged to work the WRTC teams as on many bands and modes as possible. Any station that appears in all 59 WRTC team logs will be able to download a certificate from the WRTC 2014 website after the contest. No additional application will be necessary. Questions about WRTC's 2014 and its awards program can be sent to info@WRTC2014.org. On the air, the special event call sign, TM67VA, will be on the air through October the 19th to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the World War I Battle of La Ville-Armand de Alsace, France. Activity will be on 80, 40, and 20 meters using CW, single sideband, and RIDI. All contacts with TM68VA are valid for the Centennial of War, 1914 to 1918 award, and will be confirmed via the Bureau. In DX, members of the Castris DX gang are currently on the air as TM5FI from Ratanao Island, and will be there through June the 4th. Activity is on high-frequency bands only, QSL via F5XX. JA7HMZ is on the air as V63DX from Pohnpei Island in Micronesia through June the 5th. His activity is on 80 through 6 meters using various modes, QSL via JA7HMZ direct only. AF6WU and AF6KJ will be active as V31WU and V31DV respectively from Belize between June 9th and the 15th. Operations will be on the high-frequency bands using single sideband and PSK31. QSL both call signs via AF6WU, director via the Bureau. Electronic QSLs go either by Logbook of the World or EQSL. Lastly, a 6-member Russian team led by RU0LM is preparing to operate from South Kuril Islands in the Asiatic Russia from June the 16th to the 26th. Call sign to be used will be RI0F. Operations will be on all bands, including 30, 17, and 12 meters, using CW sideband, and you can QSL via RX3F. A new study suggests that the activity of the sun may have more of an influence on lightning storms on Earth than was previously thought. This according to the researchers at the University of Reading in England, who found that when an especially fast-moving solar wind may be connected to an increase in the number of lightning storms recorded here on Earth. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather MB, KB3TZD, has the details.
According to meteorologists, lightning strikes the Earth about 4 million times a day. One theory on how it forms suggests that the gas in our atmosphere is electrified by cosmic rays. When our sun is in the most active part of its 11-year cycle, in theory, its magnetic field is at its strongest and should account for fewer cosmic rays entering our atmosphere. Based on this, one would expect to see fewer lightning strikes at the peak of the solar cycle than at its low point. While previous studies have shown a negative or inverse correlation between solar activity and lightning over the long term, this latest research found just the opposite. As scientists looked at the relationship between solar activity and lightning over a much shorter period of a few weeks, they noted that when the sun was most active, they did see a drop in cosmic rays. Big surprise was that they also noted a definite increase in amounts of lightning. As part of the study, the scientists looked at the speed of the solar wind coming off the sun, which varies depending upon which part of the sun is facing the Earth. When a fast solar wind swept over our home planet, the researchers found that the number of recorded lightning strikes actually went up. The exact cause of this phenomenon has yet to be determined, but one possibility is that charged particles from the sun are riding on extremely fast solar winds. While they don't move quite as quickly as the cosmic rays, they may move fast enough to serve the same function with the aid of a swift movement from the solar wind. If the theory eventually proves to be true, it could help weather forecasters to predict the likelihood of lightning storms in the future. This, in turn, could be a safety net to let hams and other two-way radio users know when they should lower their towers, make sure to disconnect all gear from their antenna lead-in cables and the ground connectors. Also, that it's the time to disconnect their gear from the AC power lines coming into their homes. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The study describing the findings was recently published in the journal's Environmental Research Letters. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available on Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, in Vero Beach, Florida, saying 73, and we thank you for listening.